Hello, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 649. And the topic today is water shoes. Interestingly enough. Now, before I start talking about water shoes, let me go ahead and bring up the contact information. If you want to give me feedback, anything at all, about the podcast, how you feel about it, how it's going, what you want to do with it, the email address is autism, AUTISM, at Quix, QUIX, .US. If you want me to come speak to a group, I know it's kind of a long shot, but let's go ahead and just throw it out there. You can always do that by calling my telephone answering machine. It's country code 1, area code 575, exchange 461, and the phone number is 2716. 1-575-461-2716. Water shoes. I have to go back a little bit and explain how water shoes got started, and then kind of some interesting insights that I've cooked up about the interesting thing about treating, about being about water shoes. I have gone backpacking a lot in the past. Well, not really a lot. I've gone backpacking in the past, and I enjoyed it. And when my children got old enough, my youngest daughter, I think, was probably 13. My oldest daughter was 13. She's now 18. She's turned 18 today. Happy birthday, Shana. She's 18 years old today. She's far away from us now. She's working with the AmeriCorps up in Utah. I find that very interesting. Anyway, I went backpacking with her, and we decided to take this one trail. I had some experience in the Pecos Wilderness, which is just about 2 hours from my home, and so we went. I found a trail that was reasonably accessible, figured out where it was, and where the trailhead was, and we decided to try to make this trip. Now, we had planned a long trip, like 9-10 days, going up and out and coming out kind of at the other side of something, in the hopes of getting, you know, it was actually, we were going to kind of hike into a girls' camp that Shane was going to. And we didn't actually end up doing it, sad to say. We only got 4 days into the trip. And I'll tell you a few reasons why. I mean, a couple of reasons why were we weren't quite ready for just how arduous this hike was. It was just relentlessly, I really have to work up to that kind of trip. You know, I'm not quite there. I'm not physically active enough. And it's a combination of things. One, because I'm lazy, and other reasons because I don't often get opportunities to be physically active particularly with everything I'm doing. But, you know, I probably could if I took the time to do it. Besides, you know, going and helping Lisa with all the things that she does. I do try to bike back and forth to work, but it doesn't show up very often. So we went on this hike. Getting back off a tangent I was on. And this hike, and I guess I saw on the map, but it didn't really register with me, the water crossings it had. Of course, water crossings, when you're on a trail, they don't have nice bridges across the water at water crossings. In fact, very rarely is that true, unless you're in a really civilized part of the forest. And when you're going into the wilderness, you leave civilization very quickly. It goes away. So we had these water crossings, because I had my typical stuff, all the stuff I learned from Boy Scouting, which is somewhat dangerous to do. Boy Scouts do camping. If you get old enough, you might do a little bit of backpacking, but really not very much. And I've gotten into really backpacking a little more seriously than scouts tend to. Just because, you know, I'm more interested in doing that. So I packed up my normal Boy Scout sort of pack, lots of clothes, buddy burner type stuff, you know, the whole kit and caboodle, this, that, and the other thing. And my pack probably weighed about 65, 70 pounds. Now, I'm a big guy, so that's not a huge deal, but my pack certainly wasn't designed for that much weight. It was designed for bulk, but not much weight. And I think I had just too much on there. And I had the whole thing, you know. Now, I had done good enough. I mean, I'm smart enough now that I wore better clothes than, like, a normal scout would normally wear. Scouts tend to wear cotton a lot because it's comfortable and it breathes well, which is really bad because if it gets rained on, you freeze and you die, you know. And even if it doesn't rain on you, you have a poncho on, and inside that, it basically rains on you and you freeze and you die just from condensation. You know, well, you don't necessarily die, but you can get really sick, and you can get hypothermia, and you can get all kinds of weird problems. And so that kind of leads into something that I'll talk about a little bit about different attitudes about how you handle things. I was wearing mostly polyester. Polyester dries really quickly when it gets wet. So you kind of let that happen, which is a whole different kind of connotation than other things. Anyway, so I had all my normal stuff on. I had my little poncho on the back. Had on my big old hiking boots, my little tough hiking boots for handling tough terrain. And so we went. We were both going. And we did pretty good. Tina was starting to have problems first. I started having problems the day after she did. But she was pretty excited about getting down that hill and not getting involved in this stuff. Anyway, so I went. I didn't know how many water crossings there were, and of course, these water crossings, like I said, don't have bridges. They're just, you know, just kind of. The trail ends at one side of a stream and picks up on the other side of the stream, and you get yourself across the stream. Hopefully, it's not too bad. I had a bad combination, heavy pack, kind of high on my shoulders, boots that were more made for hiking on rocky terrain as opposed to slogging through rivers. And that combination got me. So we spent more of our time sitting on the wrong side, on the back side of the stream that we kept crossing over and over and over and over and over again, trying to dry out my shoes and my socks. And just ended up having to give up about it. And, of course, the huge blisters began after that because you don't do that. You know, you have to dry out your stuff on occasion. And, you know, just nuttiness, wildness, stuff you really shouldn't be doing. And I learned a lot from that trip. And one of the first things I did after that trip was I bought everybody who I was going to go hiking with me, mostly me and my girls, I bought us water shoes. And I just started wearing them all the time, you know, and... Unfortunately, right before the first hike, I mean, I broke these suckers in for a year. They were in fantastic shape, and my feet were so accustomed to being in them barefoot, and you know, and I walked around in them. Everything was great. We took several practice hikes up to Kukuri Mountain, which is our local elevation change. It isn't a big hike. It's probably only about a mile and a half or so, but you know. It goes up pretty hefty, and then it comes down. So it kind of gives you the same kind of thing, you know. It's pretty good for a little bit of conditioning before you go on a hike. It doesn't take the place of the hike, sincerely. unfortunately, like about a week before on this camping trip where I had had this, my shoes had gotten muddy. So I put them out to dry so I could knock the shoes off of them, because I was getting all excited about going this hiking trip with my youngest daughter. And a stupid dog stole one of my shoes, or something did. I had one shoe left and one shoe I didn't have. So real quick, went and ordered something else. It was the wrong shoe completely for the job. The kind of water shoes that I like weren't being sold by Lands' End anymore. I went to Lands' End and bought kind of a enclosed sandal type shoe. And it was all wrong. It wasn't closed up enough. I got all kinds of rocks and dirt and crap in there. And I was constantly had rocks in my sandals. They gave me great pain. And I may have threw okay, but let me tell you, I still got those shoes, of course. The shoes I don't want, I get to keep forever. The shoes I like die quickly or get stolen by dogs. Interesting how life works like that. Kind of the whole idea of opposition. But now I've got these new water shoes. I've been wearing them for maybe about a month or so. And just now getting down to wearing them more as kind of without my socks on, now that it's started to warm up a little bit. Getting ready for the next big hiking trip. This one I think will be a whole lot better. These are a little more expensive shoes. Certainly a big discount. Got huge water vents to get stuff out. But those water vents are really heavily screened. Water goes out, but I don't think dirt and stuff like that's particularly going to come in. Silt may, but silt doesn't end up being your big problem. The big problem ends up being the rocks that rub you. So hopefully they'll work okay. Now I have to tell you a little bit about these shoes, just the simple reason of what it was ostensibly designed for. Because it will give you kind of an idea of how this works. These are actually they aren't kayak shoes exactly, but they're kind of based on them. Now there's two different ways you can look at kayaking, for instance. Now I have no experience of kayaking, I'm only going by what I've been told by other people and what I've read about. There's two different ways you can look at kayaking. One's the traditional way, and the other one ends up being kind of the way that more experienced but revolutionary people do it. The first way to kayak is that everything about it is supposed to be keeping yourself dry. You tend to be in a zip-up sort of an environment that keeps out the elements completely. Now, kayaking is tricky because, you're down and dirty with the water, Of course, it's kind of covered up to try and make it so it doesn't get flooded. That's the whole point about the traditional form of kayaking is you're supposed to keep the water out as much as possible. So you tend to wear a wetsuit that keeps out the water. You tend to, it's almost like deep sea diving in a way, sort of, You put yourself in these rubber things that kind of mate with each other and kind of try to keep the water out. At least that was one of the concepts of it. The one that's actually kind of been winning lately, because it just seems to work better all the way around, even the real, pro-am kayaking sports, they've kind of gotten into this too. It comes to the whole idea that you're going to get wet. And it's how you manage that wetness that makes life work better. You're just going to get wet, period. And it's management of it, instead of trying to keep yourself from getting wet. I noticed that in hiking, when you ford rivers, they tend to tell you to, put some of the, I guess you could call them lighter duty hikers, ones that only do little hikes in as part of Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts or Campfire Girls or whatever, the whole thing was that you were supposed to get a what do you call it, bread sack, you know, the little plastic bread bags that your bread comes in, and you put that inside your boot. This is kind of a modified version of it. Your boot's going to get wet. I don't care how much stuff you spray on. I don't care if you dip it in rubber, you know, and try to seal it up. You're going to get wet. And the plastic bag was supposed to protect your inner socks and your feet from getting wet. Because, you know, having wet stuff meant that number one, you were getting cold. And number two, you were going to get horrible blisters. Because this stuff, when it gets wet, it starts rubbing around. Your skin starts behaving differently. And it just creates all these problems. Well, the other side, you know, it just kind of smacks, you know, one end of it is to wear like waders when you're going swimming. And you have waders up high enough so that, you know, so that you hopefully don't get water in you, you know, any close to your legs. You're basically living in this rubber glove that's supposed to keep all the water out and protect you. So the whole concept is just to say you're going to get wet. You're going to get wet. It's kind of the whole concept of wearing polyester that dries really easy is. You know, the things that you're trying to protect yourself against is mostly hypothermia. And so you wear clothing that doesn't matter if you get wet. Wool is excellent. It still keeps you warm even when it's wet. Now, it weighs a ton. And there's a lot of good reasons why you shouldn't try to get your wool wet. But even if it does get wet, you're not going to die. And that ends up being the kind of things that is kind of the extreme, I don't know if I'm really extreme, ultralight backpacking is kind of saying, what does it take to, number one, stave off death, and number two, make your pack as light as possible. One of the horrible things about traditional backpacking is how heavy everything is. And how just hard on you it gets to be. I'm gonna die soon. So, you know, you get that whole new concept. You know, instead of trying to avoid contact, you say it's okay that I have contact. I just want to manage it as well as I can. Wear polyester. You wear water shoes if you're going to be fording a lot of streams. You know, you don't mind that you're going to get wet. The water's cold, but that's life. You know, are you going to die from it? Probably not. Because, number one, it's going to slough off almost immediately. Your water shoes are going to get dry fast. Your clothing's going to get dry fast. You manage heat other ways. While you're fording through streams, you're not trying to prevent yourself from getting cold or getting wet, because you're constantly going to be getting wet. You look much more at trying to handle the fact that you're going to get wet. Because, you know, I fell in the stream a couple of times. You know, this is pretty much close to a river. More a river. And I ended up dunking and getting some of my stuff really wet. Thanks goodness I had it all. I had my dry stuff, all my stuff wrapped in plastic bags. Now I don't bother wrapping up but a few things in plastic, because for the other stuff, it really doesn't matter. You have a pack that sloughs off water easy, you know, and even if water gets through, you don't worry about it. You don't get weird about it. You have a bag inside that's waterproof, and you put the things that demand waterproofing in there. You know, you have your food waterproof. If you have personal electronics you take with you, you have that waterproofed. Things like that. Otherwise, why bother? You know, you got 100 things that it doesn't matter if they get wet. Why on earth try to stop them from not getting wet? The stuff that's required to do that just weighs more. You can. And I was thinking about the applications of these things in life. How we treat things. We tend to be really, we try to dominate or control nature. and to a certain degree, that's really kind of stupid. I always notice that in kind of physics. A lot of the things that we use, a lot of things that we do, don't take into account physics. They actually act like that physics doesn't work, or that gravity doesn't function, or that convective currents don't happen. All these things just kind of don't happen. There's a cop here. I need to write stuff. This is Jay Nemro, quasi. No, this is the Life Autistic episode number 649. Have a great day. Am I going? Yeah, I'm going. Well, I was talking about even ending this thing when I got into Las Vegas, but now I'm out of Las Vegas, and I want to continue to talk about what I was talking about, because I didn't really even begin to get there. I was telling stories, and I never even got down to the point. Why did I tell the story? The whole point is that, you know, we spend so much of our time fighting against what nature is. Water is going to get into everything. And the question is, why fight it? Why fight it? If nature's going to be that way, why get weird about it? I guess it comes from the old adage about that we needed to tame things, you know. The world was supposed to get tamed, in some people's estimation. Now, people say, oh, the Bible says that. Boy, are you being anti-biblical, James? Like, no, I'm not. We're supposed to have dominion over the world. But we're not supposed to tame it particularly, because, you know, all that gets boring. Once everything's tamed, what else is there to do in life? You know, you don't have any more challenges to take care of. And who wants a tame world? A tame world is one where, you know, I don't want to say it's European, because of my European listeners, I don't want to offend them. But, you know, it tries hard to make it so that everybody has kind of a mundane, blue life. Nothing ever bad happens. If your house blows up, that's okay. There's another one. Doesn't make any difference. Just go ahead and go down to the next house, knock on the door, and go in because it's yours. You know, well, it's not yours. It all belongs to the government, and the government will let you stay in it. You know, and that's kind of the way it ends up being. You know, nature has a lot of great processes that one can take advantage of. I think about my house. The fact that my house, I call it a barn, because it's basically kind of a, you know, although you can shut it up, you can never shut it up very well. Because it's got windows from the 60s that are absolute garbage. Yes! I don't think the things keep anything out, particularly. Much less the cold. So it becomes a silly thing. I mean, you could spend a ton of money and try to retrofit everything to try to make it more efficient, but it's not. It never does. The first house we had didn't even have insulation in the walls. We tried putting a little bit in the ceiling, but it was kind of a lost cause because we couldn't put it into the walls particularly. And so it became kind of a lot. That was a bunch of money that was lost. We put really expensive windows on it to try and make it so that it could stay warmer. And I guess it did. We ultimately sold the place with those things in there and just kind of walked away from it. It's really kind of a waste. That's why I haven't even bothered on my current house, because, you know, what really is the point? Because we take advantage of the natural cycles of things. I'd like to put some solar on it just to take advantage of the fact that we have some pretty sunny winters, and that can really make life pleasant. We tend to standardize on things that may make sense somewhere else, but don't really make sense where we are. You know, most of the houses that we build came from a place where there was tons of trees, there was tons of forests. Now, I don't live in a place that has any forests. Even the mountains I'm driving past now on my way to Taos, they don't have a lot of construction grade lumber in them. A little bit, but not much. Most of the stuff, timber here, can't be touched. There's not a lot of logging going on. And most of the stuff going on here is mostly for firewood, mostly to keep you warm. And when you bring a stick-built house here, you end up having to ship in almost every single bit of that. You know, you don't take advantage of any of the natural, indigenous anything here. Adobe's excellent to do here. You know, the ground's good for it. There's lots of it. Sod, the whole thing about sawgrass rust are excellent. It's an excellent idea here because you've got tons of the stuff. You don't have to fret trying to manufacture something that isn't natural here. You know, for the grand majority of the year, we have cool evenings, cool nights, even during the summer. Even during the heat of summer, we tend to have cool nights anyway. We have hot summers. I mean, not blisteringly so, but they're pretty hot. And reasonably mild winters. So you don't have to worry too much about suiting up your house against the cold, because there really isn't a whole bunch of cold. You know, you have cold days, but by and large, you got the 40s and the 50s most of the time. But here we don't build stuff like that. Everything's very standardized. You build a nice sealed up house that's all nice and insulated. You put a heat pump on it that's actually made for the south. You know, refrigerated air is something that you do when it's just so humid that evaporative cooling doesn't work, or that just opening up a window and letting a cool breeze in doesn't work either. You know, it never really cools off where it's really humid. We create these circumstances that are made for all circumstances, even the ones that you'll never really get. You know, double pane glass is something for the northern latitudes, yet we install it down here too, even though it's somewhat dumb. It's a whole lot of money spent for something that really ends up being of limited value. And that's kind of where things come from. I think people are starting to get more of a sense of that, of saying, you know, you tend to adjust, and poor people do this better than rich people do. Rich people tend not to care, and so they'll be really wasteful, or they'll be really, really over-exuberant about a lot of interesting things that they don't really need to be, just because. And, you know, it's kind of dumb. Kind of silly. Anyway, so. And that's where these whole water shoes come in. You know, you can have just what you would generally use for all hiking situations. You know, big, heavy boots, leather, you know, high top thingies. Or you can have more like water shoes. When you're slogging through a situation with a whole bunch of water in it, you want to have something that's more along those lines. In kayaking, you do the same thing. If you're around water all the time, just manage the water. Don't try to seal yourself up from it like you're on some kind of cruise ship. Is that the experience you want? If it is, why don't you just get on a cruise ship? If you want to be basically in a luxury resort that just happens to bob along in the ocean. If you want to have a real ocean experience, get a real ocean experience. You know, if you want to be on a resort, just go to a resort. Why do you bother doing it at sea? It gives you several complications that you really don't want. Seasickness, for one. I mean, saying, yeah, I've been on cruises, I'm an ocean-going guy, and you go, please, give me a break. You don't know anything about it. There's nothing to it. just like going to, you know, Vegas. The same basic thing. We try to take Vegas out to sea. It's interesting, but you can go to Vegas and have the same kind of experience without all the mess of having water around. Anyway, so I don't know if I'm decrying the genericization of all things. You know, every place is like every other place. Every house is like every other house. You know, it doesn't matter if you're living in Timbuktu. Where is that, Libya? I forget. Anyway, it doesn't matter if you're living someplace over there in a really nice house that has all the accoutrements, or if you're living in Tucumcari, New Mexico in a really nice house with all the accoutrements. You'll never be able to tell the difference. The only difference is once you get out of that house and start living in the local culture. You know, it's almost like we just want to be tourists almost everywhere we go. You know, you never really get connected to a place or to the land. You know, you could pick up your house, plunk it down somewhere else because it's pretty self-contained, and, you know, what difference does it make? The climate's the same, even the view's outside the same. We plow it all down, smooth it all out, plant it all in grass like you're living on some kind of golf course. And there you are. And you're going, well, why bother? I could have this anywhere. I could do that here. Why make the change? You know, well, I really want to live in Dallas. You go, why? Why not just live in Atlanta or you know, Billings, Montana, or wherever? Who cares? It's all the same. You got the same McDonald's, the same Walmarts, the same everything. You know, nothing's really different. Oh, is this guy going to follow me? Oh, man. The whole point was to get away from this guy. Okay, I'm gonna find a turn off so this guy can get out from behind me. I hate people following me. You guys already know that. I go on back roads just to get people away from me, but they don't. They seem to struggle with getting away from me. Anyway. I guess I'm saying be a little bit connected. Be a little bit connected with things. With the place where you are. Enjoy it. If it lends itself to some kind of living, live that kind of living. Let yourself go with it. And if I lived close to the mountains, I'd be up in the mountains all the time. There's too many people who live up in beautiful surroundings, pay a whole bunch to do that, and then they never do anything with it. You know, they go and they get their satellite television so they can have the same TV experience they have everywhere. You know, they make sure that they have electricity because, you know, they want to have the same electricity they had in the city. They want all that. They hate living down a dirt road because they want paved. And it's like, God, why? You've got this wonderful experience to just kind of step outside your door and go. In fact, why even have a door? Leave it open. You know, unless it's winter time, and then you move into something a little more suitable for winter. It's funny like that. You know, people want to take the same circumstances with them wherever they go. And it's like, guys, it's sad. Don't we have anything better to do? Anyway, so that's why I've got my water shoes. That's why I keep my house open most of the time in the summertime. That's why so many things. That's why I do a lot of things I do. You know, I like living 2 hours from the mountains. I wish I could get closer. But my wife says, too cold. Too cold. Too warm. She's a person that grew up basically in a refrigerator box. Which is funny because she didn't live out, she was always outside doing stuff. You know, so it really wasn't like she was some little homebody that never moved. But, you know, geez. Anyway. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This has been episode number 649. If you want to contact me, the email address is autism@quix.us. If you want to contact me for the crazy reason of having me come speak to your group, and I'd love to, any opportunity I get, the phone number is 1-575-461-2716. Jay Nemro, I can't believe I put my home phone number out there for anybody to call. I must be nuts. I must be crazy. Anyway, this is Jay Nemro. Where's my button pusher? There it is. Have a great day.